Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Hello, everyone. My name is Marty Bennett, and I'm your host today for this week's roundup. And we'll be covering three issues in international education that have popped over the news wires in the last couple of weeks. We took a break last week for Christmas, and now we'll be back at you today, continuing every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. For this live chat. And for those of you listening on the podcast, thank you for downloading and subscribing to our SMIE Midweek Roundup. Great to be with you again today in this new year. And we're going to start things off today discussing some topics that we have been lurking under the surface for a number of years, but are now coming to the fore for a number of institutions. And we're going to talk today about how this can really be a pause for concern moving forward for institutions. And the goal of all of what we're doing here at SMIE Consulting is to help provide institutions a chance to see how these current issues are maybe affecting their international recruitment strategies. So we want to take time each week, as we do, to look at three news stories and to see how they are potentially impacting what we do in international education here in the United States. And we start by not just looking at our own belly buttons as we figure out who we are and what we stand for in the United States when it comes to international student recruitment, but we also need to look at the world around us, because that's part of the challenge in today's market, is really understanding what our competition is, and that we do live in a very competitive landscape for international students around the world. There are over 5 million students studying outside their home country right now, and the United States has about 22% of that market share. Our market share is down over the last 15, 20 years, from about high of about 28% in the early 2000s to where it is now at 22%. But the pie has grown dramatically. Back in 2000, there were about 2.6 million students studying outside their home country. So that number has almost doubled in 19 years, as has the international student population coming to the United States in that time, more than doubled. So we're going to look today and every week at some issues and how the United States can, and institutions in the U.S. can, position themselves to really take advantage of their strengths, but also look at ways that they can be adjusting their messaging to demonstrate their awareness of the world around them in terms of the competitive nature of international student recruitment. And we're going to start down under. I'm posting a link now in the comments section on our Facebook page for SMIE Consulting from a news story this past week coming out of, it's actually a U.S. News and World Report story, but about international student worries down under. This is particularly in reference to how the over-reliance on overseas students in Australia is really stretching resources and leaving institutions potentially vulnerable economically and reputationally for what their over-reliance on institutions have on international students in Australia. So there have been numerous stories over the past 6 months to a year of the impact of Chinese students, particularly in Australian universities, and what that means for the universities that enroll them. For those who aren't familiar, Australia enrolls currently about, the numbers seem to reflect about 154,000 Chinese students studying in Australia's universities. Now, one of the things to keep in mind with regards to Australia, that's a little less than half of the roughly 363,000 Chinese students that are studying in the U.S. as of the Open Doors report last year, from this past year. And but the issue is that's for a country the size of Australia, you're looking at 33 public universities and 3 private universities enrolling just for China, from regarding Chinese students, 154,000 Chinese students at 36 schools, universities. So that's a huge, huge amount of students concentrated at a very small number of institutions. We always think in the United States that a large proportion of international students congregate at a very small percentage of universities. But in Australia, there is not that luxury where you have, and I don't think that's nearly as dramatic as it is, obviously, in Australia, where you have 36 schools, that alone have 154,000 Chinese students, let alone any students from India, which is the second largest demographic at about 54,000 students. So what is that? How is that impacting Australian institutions? This is something that I think there are some institutions in the U.S. we've talked about previously, University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, and Michigan State University, that have become very reliant on China as a source of international students for their campuses, where Chinese students make up 50, 60% of the international student population, if not a little bit more. At some of the top institutions in the city of Sydney in Australia, University of Sydney and University of New South Wales, Chinese students alone make up more than 70% of their international students at those two institutions. There's been warnings from auditors within the state or the provincial governments in Australia. The New South Wales auditor has said that there are 10 universities in that state in New South Wales, and of those 10 universities, that they are at a clear concentration risk of students from China that can impact, can be, those revenues from those institutions would be significantly impacted if those schools were to have any significant political, or if the country experienced any political or economic events with China that would lead to decreases in Chinese student interest in Australia. So very significant on the economic front. There's also in the article, it's actually a fairly detailed article looking at a variety of different threats, also talking about reputational damage that is being done by having huge concentrations of students from any one country. But in particular in China, they make reference to students that are being graduated that have much lower English language skills, and that the graduates are from master's degree programs there are showing weak performance in the Australian labor market, particularly Chinese male graduate students in management and commerce at Group of Eight institutions in Australia. The Group of Eight is made up of the top schools in Australia, Australia National University, and universities in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Queensland, and Western Australia, New South Wales. But there are universities that would reject that claim, but some of the data seems to reflect that it is potentially a significant problem. So what there is really some deep soul searching going on, I think, in Australia, in the higher ed structure, as to how reliant they want to be on international students from China. And that the impact it is having on their institutions, that English standards are lower, that they're having to dumb down some of their curriculum to meet the needs of this increasingly large percentage of their program's student populations. And that has negative implications as well for institutional reputation long term. So there's a whole series of events going on there in Australia related to international students, but specifically Chinese students, that does give pause for concern and some concern not only in Australia, but other institutions around the world that have become so dependent on international students as a source of revenue, particularly international students from any one particular country. So I think this is one to keep an eye on in the coming weeks and months, because how Australia goes, their benefits, have they benefited post election of 2016 elections in terms of international student flows? Certainly they have benefited, and Canada has certainly benefited strongly as well. But you're starting to see in both of those countries that have limited capacity. We're talking 36 universities in Australia, you're talking less than 100 universities and colleges in Canada that are increasingly absorbing these extra international students that might have come to the United States in the past. And they're now starting to experience significant growing pains and issues at the institutional level that they are gonna feel some pinches in the future if they aren't already, as it relates to the international student population on their campuses in terms of strains on resources, but also longer-term over-reliance on any one country. So we've seen some of that in the U.S. at some of the larger flagship institutions, as I mentioned earlier, But I think smaller schools that have gone all in on China are certainly going to start feeling the pinch on this if they don't start to diversify and do so in a long-term strategic way where their students are going to be coming from. Because over-reliance on any one country is never one or two or even three countries is never a very strong way of going about international student recruitment. You have your primary markets, secondary markets, and tertiary markets. But if you have only primary and very little tertiary or secondary markets, you're putting your institution at risk for potential disaster and the financial disaster in the weeks, in the months and years to come. So, what does that look like? Well, and why is this an important piece of the puzzle? So, Australia again is that right now, either depending on which number of which statistics you read, they are anywhere from the second to the fourth or fifth largest. The latest Project Atlas data has them in fourth place, with China having recently surpassed them as a destination country for international students. So we're seeing a lot of changes here, and not just Australia, but in other countries as well, as we mentioned. But why should we be attracting these top international students? Kind of returning the focus to the United States. And I'm always encouraged when I look at news stories about international education. I'm always encouraged when I see non-educational sources looking at the topic of international education and why bringing international students to the United States is important. And there was a nice piece from Forbes in the last couple of weeks that is titled "Attracting Top International Students Helps All of Us. Here's Why It Matters." And it does take a kind of a obviously a business. It's in Forbes, so it's obviously has a business slant to it. But it does take a look at kind of looking at it from a business perspective. And it leads with, would a smart company walk away from a large, growing, and profitable market in which it had a powerful advantage? And if serving the market well made the organization stronger and more successful, would you ignore the present and future competitive value and walk away? That would be foolish, wouldn't it? Well, welcome to the International University Smackdown. So love the opening paragraph or two on this in this article. And I like it. I like the focus of it because it does putting into context what we do in international education, international student recruitment, in terms of bringing students to our shores, to our educational institutions, is that building the value of U.S. institutions globally and the quality of their instruction and their degrees has long been seen as the gold standard. And as the article makes clear, those students that we have brought in from abroad that study at our institutions that eventually become leaders of our business communities, that those that stay who become are entrepreneurial and decide to form their own companies. We see, I think we saw a recent story where there was almost, I think it was 30% or maybe more of Fortune 500 companies in the United States had international students that were either their founders or their leaders. You also see the U.S. State Department and one of their founding statements related to education is why they are involved in international education is to foster public diplomacy. And to educate future leaders from other countries here in the United States and the benefit that has for the country as a whole, politically, economically, socially, outside of the for or in terms of the US geopolitical relationships with countries around the world. And it's those leaders that are educated here that go home and become leaders of their own in their own right in their own countries that hopefully lead to future improved bilateral relations between the United States and those various countries. So the article does obviously state the case for why international students are, or the current state of the field, with that international students are in the United States are an important piece of of our economy in terms of the global exports are almost $37 billion, according to the Open Doors NAFSA numbers from this past November. But we're also looking at how we are in relation to other English language speaking destination countries as the number one, and also what international students do in terms of subsidizing universities' domestic students through higher tuitions, particularly for state institutions, and what that means. And that the in the past we've talked about how like the University of Illinois decided to create pay an insurance create an insurance policy to insure itself against significant drops in tuition revenue from Chinese students. You also see and the recent story I just shared with you on Australia, there was the recommendation that Australian universities be putting part of the profits from their the Chinese students that enroll on their campuses into a futures fund to protect against future losses. So there's some creative ways that institutions are going about trying to do damage limitation as it comes to international students studying at their institutions if those numbers were to ever dry up significantly. So it's not just the tuition dollars that help institutions, it's also the money that international students spend in our communities here in the United States. So it's an important piece of the puzzle, I think, and the article references that, the impact on local communities how our international education efforts are really a growth export, growth industry, and should be considered a growth industry in the United States because we certainly have more capacity than anywhere else in the Western world to bring in more international students to our institutions, educate them, and hopefully send them home to become future leaders in their own countries, or for those that do stay, who want to become successful business leaders here. There's some great examples, and they make reference to that as well, with leaders with Elon Musk, Sergey Brin, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, all international students, either international students themselves or children of immigrants. How they have created incredible companies as a result of their work. So this article I think is a nice piece to really help shape, I think, a discussion that we all know ourselves as international educators, but one that we need to be having with our leadership on our campuses, because frankly those are the folks who are the decision makers and whether to make the investments in international education that need to be made to sustain our international student populations and our strategies and our growth in the fields. So it's really important for us as leaders in international education to be making sure our leadership are aware of the larger issues involved. Our leaders have many issues on their plate at our different institutions, but it's up to us who are on the ground, who are fighting the battles on the front lines, to really elevate the discussion to those in power on our campuses, to our legislatures. Certainly I want to give a plug to NAFSA and Advocacy Day that's coming up, that how important it is that our now more than ever, that our elected leaders are aware of the impact of these students on our college campuses, in our communities. And the article, I think, is just a great reminder to us of how we can really be taking advantage of elevating these messages and not letting all the constant negativity really drag us down. So I think that's refreshing to see that, and good on Forbes for making that a piece of what they have decided to cover in the recent months. So last topic that I'll cover today, transitioning well to from the piece about why we need to value international students on our college campuses, is what messages we put out as institutions. We all know who we are and what we are as institutions, but do we really? And we have brochures, we have marketing campaigns, we have messaging going out, but how often do we check ourselves and ask our audience, is this really what you want to be hearing? And frankly, we know our own value, but I don't know if we can convert those values effectively to what our audiences, particularly prospective international students and their parents, want to hear and what they're looking for. Because the old saying goes, you don't know what you don't know. And there's so much about the U.S. college experience that international students and parents, unless they've studied here previously, don't know about the United States and what the true value of being a student in a U.S. institution can mean for an international. So the authenticity of our messaging, the ability to earn the trust of our prospective student audiences and their parents is something that I think we can never take for granted as a priority. And in terms of what that looks like, Higher Ed Live, a great resource that I refer to often on in my newsletters and on the podcast here and live chat, is this story is actually coming out of Virginia Commonwealth and their Associate Director of Web Content and Strategy at VCU. And the story really, it's an article really reflecting what problems marketing and communications teams have on college and university campuses. And his main premise is prospective students don't trust you online. That's the problem. And how can institutions fix that? And this is really geared towards domestic audiences, but frankly, I think the rules here and the suggestions that the author makes in the article are ones that can easily be transferred to an international student enrollment marketing solution. And first and foremost, where he starts off is institutions need to be producing authentic content. We all talk about being authentic in when we're doing our messaging and how we talk about our institutions, but it's really making sure that what we say it is. If you have an engineering class that you have a photo of in your messaging, make sure it's actually a class of engineering undergraduate students that you're using. If you are, it's okay to use stock photos, but is it really? But just being authentic as a number one guiding principle, I think is really key. The next piece is letting students post your social media content. And this is always an area of debate. I know a lot of institutions will go, oh my goodness, I don't think I'm comfortable letting students do that. And in the early days of social media, I could understand that when no one really knew what social was or how it was to be perceived. So I really see that this is something that in today, 10 years on in social media world, we're now talking about an industry where the expectation is that that you're speaking to and you're interacting with either who they say they are, but also people that can best reflect your messaging to your prospective audiences. And your current students are that. And that can be your current students posting as themselves. And that I think that's a little oversimplified to say that having international students or any group of students post their own content for prospective students is a risk, because I think that's just well overblown and frankly a little bit naive in terms of who you're actually dealing with. You're dealing with students who spend over half their lives online. More likely they're online constantly during their waking hours. And it presents opportunities for institutions to really allow your current students the opportunity to talk to future students. And that's the piece that, whether it's Instagram or Snapchat takeovers, or you have them answering questions at live chats on different platforms, or doing an Instagram live story, whatever it might be, it's taking advantage of who your current students are. Because we always say this in admissions circles. We say our current students and our alumni, they're our best ambassadors. They're our best recruiters. And if we don't, and when you think about it online, it just makes sense to be using them online, because letting them help tell your story as an institution, personalizing the story for your institution, is so important and valuable. So it also, the third principle the article mentions is demonstrating who your target students are. And it's okay to, when you're in terms of your marketing and your messaging, when you are doing broad-based messaging on social platforms, whether through video or chats or posting on social, is that it's okay to focus on those, on what your what your core audience and what you want your core audience, your target audience to be. You know who your students are better than anyone. And so it's important to be honest about the type of students who succeed at your school. So to communicate that. What's another thing international students in particular are looking for from institutions that they're attending? If it's not the students, their parents are certainly wondering about it. And it's what are the outcomes? And that's the fourth point that the author makes in the story, is showing real alumni outcomes. Are you allowing, or do you have those stories of successful international alums that you are putting out through your social networks? Are you including their success stories in messaging through your Comflow? Are you making a point to go out and reach out to those alums and involve them in the recruitment process in various ways? So I think that's a real missed opportunity, and I know some other prognosticators out there have shared that the growth of international alumni in recruitment strategies is going to be a significant area in 2019. I certainly would welcome that. I don't think it's going to be a universal thing yet, because I don't think enough institutions are at that level and they have done the homework that they need, frankly, on their own international alumni to be able to use them effectively. That's a real challenge at a lot of institutions. The fifth point is humanizing your accounts. In your online sessions, if you're tweeted at, you should respond. When you get Facebook messages, make sure you're responding. Sign them with your name so your audience knows that it's a real person. And if you're sending mass emails, what happens when those are replied to? Is someone reading and responding to them? Those are the kinds of questions that if you're just sending out mass emails and nobody's ever responding to them, that's a wasted effort. And it will fall on deaf ears in large part. Same with what you do online in terms of social media. So think about that before you go headlong into new strategies that try and leverage those assets. The sixth point is not overproducing videos. I know our marketing and communication departments are really geared towards doing slick Madison Avenue kind of quality campaigns, certainly for maybe alumni giving and that type of thing. Those are absolutely essential. But when you're talking about future students and parents, does it have to be a full-on, all the bells and whistles kind of video production that you'll spend $20,000, $30,000 on? Probably not. I would say likely not. You can get away with something that's a current student walking on campus, doing a walking interview or a walking tour. Or a personal interview where it's just a student interviewing another student with an iPhone. That's the kind of thing that overproduction can really help be a waste of time and valuable resources that you don't have. And it's, as I talked about earlier, in terms of communicating the importance of international student recruitment up the chain to our leaders on campus, this also applies when it comes to getting your leaders, thought leaders on campus, to be good at social. And this can be a very difficult task. There's some that have someone from the MarCom department that is on that person's president's or chancellor's staff that helps do those kind of things for them. But it's not just press links, but it's also helping to educate them on how to respond, on how to interact, and having those conversations with leadership is as important as actual messaging that you're sending out on your own in the longer term, in terms of building kind of a fully functional institution-wide strategy when it comes to using social and online messaging. So hopefully this has given you some good food for thought on how you can be applying what we've talked about today to what you do on your own campuses. I'd like to leave you with a couple of last resources for those of you who aren't already subscribing to our international e-newsletter. I put it out on Mondays each week, and we have this coming out. It's called All the SMI e-news that's fit to share. And happy New Year to you as well, Lou. Hope you're well, and I look forward to catching up with you soon. I'm posting a link to our most recent newsletter for all the SMIE news fit to share. You're welcome to hit the subscribe button on that if you'd like to get more, get that delivered to your inbox each Monday morning. Also, I want to leave you with our our SMIE website link, smieconsulting.org. Some great free resources on that site, and really encourage you to take advantage of those as well. The catalog of past editions of the Midweek Roundup are there. Links to those on our YouTube channel. We have a playlist specifically for these live chat videos. And we also podcast each of these episodes on your favorite podcast provider, whether iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, or Stitcher. All of those have the SMIE Consult Midweek Roundup available for download and subscription. So free for all of these resources, and encourage you to definitely check those out. And also key on our blogs that we put out every month on different key topics in international ed. So thanks again for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you around at conferences or at other events in international education world. Have a great day.